What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of 2 clinically studied ingredients in 1 revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count for your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Family Secrets is a production of iHeartRadio.
Where to wear one's flaws, on your face where they can never be concealed, or inside a mirrored bathroom cabinet where they grow more shameful with each hidden moment. Where to handle those flaws in the light of day or in the gauzy dimness of a feminine bathroom. What to do with the burden of being human.
That's Alison Landa, writer, editor, teacher, coach, and author of the recent memoir, Bearded Lady. Alison's is a story of triumph, the triumph of an indomitable spirit over gaslighting, questionable parenting, and a complex journey towards self-acceptance and self-love. I'm Dani Shapiro, and this is Family Secrets. The secrets that are kept from us, the secrets we keep from others, and the secrets we keep from ourselves. Tell me about the landscape of your childhood.
I spent my childhood in a home that was way overblown, completely high on its own square footage, and incredibly wounded inside. And that's probably no accident. It was a custom home. It was built by my family, and it looked decent on the outside. I don't want to say fabulous, because the landscaping was completely out of control. It was completely weedy, and it showed its flaws on the outside, but really you had to come in to see just how flawed it was on the inside. The carpets were stained. There was an entire room without carpet that had been flooded that my parents never replaced the carpet in. And yet there were many, many touches that were very interesting. They used all the materials of the time, all the right materials of the time. There was marble, there was granite, there was cherry wood, all the things that you were supposed to put into a home of that size and that stature. But I feel that you can completely overlook that for all its flaws.
And this home was also on the edge of a winery?
Correct. It's on the edge of the Bernardo Winery in North San Diego County. In that part of the world, especially before a lot of more homes were built, there the coyotes were everywhere. I mean, that was the background to my childhood. I would hear that. And we had a dog, and we knew to keep her inside. Dogs disappeared. Cats disappeared. Every small thing disappeared because coyotes kind of ran rampant and we heard them constantly.
Now, your mother, who you have a nickname for, Nails, had a name for the house. The house had a name and also a style.
The home was called Justolaggio, and it was the first two letters of everybody in our house. There was Joan, Steve, Adam, Allison, Jonathan. And she called it a French country castle. I think she was reading a lot of Architectural Digest at that point, and I think she really liked that little detail. Oh, Nails. Nails is, my goodness, how to begin? My mother is larger than life in so many ways. At first, I adored her. She was somebody who I felt the world wounded, and the world really hadn't justified its experience to her, if that makes any sense. Basically, I felt that she didn't get a fair shake in life. She didn't want kids. That was pretty clear. She hadn't wanted children. She wanted to be free. She wanted to go to India. She wanted to experience the world. Instead, she had kids because that's what my father wanted. And I felt sorry for her for that. I felt sorry for her for being in a marriage that was very, very obviously flawed. I also looked up to her. She was somebody who, to me, was beautiful and smart and all the things that I hoped to be as a child.
Did you know as a child that Nails hadn't wanted kids?
I did. She told me. She said, I didn't want to have kids. Your father forced me to have children. And it was very, very clear. It was just like, yep, did not want to have kids, never wanted it.
Why did you call her Nails?
She was really, really into her nails, her grooming of her nails, her fake nails. I mean, at the time, I think Lee press-ons were very much the fashion, and she did that. But she also would go and get her nails done, and they were beautiful. They were very well-groomed. She kept them such, and they were just so much a part of her. But I also called her Nails because they really represented a part of her personality, very sharp and very dangerous, and you didn't want to mess with them too much. They would cut you.
Tell me a little bit about your father, who you have the nickname for of the Rooster.
Rooster is very proud of himself, especially as when I was a child, he was very proud of what he did for a living as an engineer. He actually did GPS for a very long time. Very, very proud of that, but also proud of things like frequent flyer miles. He would brag to us when we were young about his frequent flyer miles. And that made absolutely no sense to us, but we learned to nod and smile. That was just something that we did. And I think with my father, that's a very important lesson, nodding and smiling and saying yes, 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 because he doesn't really listen to what he's told. He listens to what he says. And that's really about it.
What did the frequent flyer miles represent to him?
They represented cash and cachet. He was a collector, in a sense. He checked his bank balance 3 times a day. He was big on collecting money. I think it was the collection and the accumulation of which he was very proud. Hotel points were the same thing. He was very, very into that. And the more he got, the more he enjoyed talking about it. We didn't understand that that wasn't the case for everybody. We just thought everybody's father talked about their frequent flyer miles and their hotel points. And again, we just nodded and smiled a whole heck of a lot. As far as I know, there were never money issues. There were responsibility issues. My parents sort of would bat it back and forth, almost like a volleyball. It's your job. No, it's your job. It's your job. And things did not get addressed. And what happened was that they became normalized. We felt that everybody had a floor in their home that was not covered with carpet. Everybody had stained carpets. Everybody had these things. And they just became part of our lives. And I believe that my parents fell subject to that as well, where it was just like, this is just how we live.
That's so interesting. So the dysfunction, there weren't external reasons for it. It was all internal.
Very much so. And that's a good way to put it. It was very internal. It was very internally driven. And if you look at something often enough, it just becomes part of what you're used to seeing. And I think that the state of the home became part of what we were used to seeing and what they were used to seeing. I had gone to an orthodontist and I had a plaster cast made of my jaw, and it sat on the dining room table like some sort of art object. We never did anything with it. I never got my teeth fixed. It was the same thing. It became normalized.
That is such a great detail. By the time Allison turns 10, the challenges no longer just live inside her home. Her own body begins to present challenges too. She's nearing puberty and she's changing. She isn't really conscious of the changes right away, until one day she is.
I remember the exact moment. I was sitting on the floor of the school's multipurpose room, and I could tell that the back of my shirt had ridden up slightly. And the reason that I knew that was because I heard laughter. And when somebody's laughing at you, you can tell. There's something about that, that you can tell that laughter is pointed at you. And I heard them say, "The animal." They were laughing and pointing. And I hadn't realized that I had hair there on the lower part of my back. I just had not realized that. And it was something that came into my consciousness almost like the coyotes did outside of my window. It was like once they were not there, and then they were howling. And I just became very, very aware that this was about me. This was pointed toward me, and that they were laughing at me. And after that, I became so aware that there was so much on which to be judged.
Well, and it's interesting too that your first realization that you had hair on that part of your body was accompanied by, or was, you know, caused by being made fun of. So, you know, it's sort of like a shame sandwich.
Absolutely. That's a great way to put it. It was just a shame sandwich. And I knew immediately this is not okay. Sometimes people's reactions to you tell you something about yourself. And the reaction I was receiving told me this is not right. Like, I'm a girl, right? I'm not supposed to grow hair here, am I? And at that point, I realized it wasn't just there. It was on my arms. It was all over my body. It was on my face. The realization dawned on me in that moment so quickly. My God, what is going on with me? And, you know, later on, I thought, did they do me a favor by calling this out to me? What would have happened if I'd never realized it? And would that have been a good thing or a bad thing? And I actually don't know. I went home and I pulled up my shirt and I said, I got laughed at today. And this is why. There's something wrong. And my mother's reaction was so interesting. It was like her face was very blank. And I was, of course, in tears. It was something that I never expected would have happened to me. And then when I realized this is not just happening to me, this is who and what I am, I needed her to help me. And I started to realize in that moment, help is not afoot. This is probably not going to happen.
Allison's mother does take her to a doctor fairly quickly. And the doctor uses a word she's never heard before, a word for what's going on with her, hirsute. Allison hears it and her mother hears it too. The doctor says, if this were my daughter, I would get on this immediately. He writes some lab orders for blood work. But when Allison and her mother leave the doctor's office, her mother says, let's get out of here.
She said, we can take care of this ourselves. And the lab slip disappeared. And along with the lab slip went my hopes of getting treated medically at that point. And I couldn't figure out why. I didn't understand why she wanted to bring it in-house as she did, and why she would have brought me to the doctor only to then turn around and ignore what he had to say. And the word hirsute, I understood that immediately. I understood what it meant. And I felt, honestly, I don't think it's too dramatic to say life sentence. I don't know that I had those words to put to it, but I knew that I was in for something and it was going to be a big deal and something that was going to define my life.
Have you come to realize
what was going on with your mother by, on the one hand, taking you to the doctor, and on the other hand, rejecting what the doctor had to say?
I've thought about this so much. And what I've come to realize is that she exercised her responsibility to the best of her capability, which is to say, she took me to the doctor. She couldn't go beyond that. She couldn't continue to admit that something was wrong. Something was wrong with her daughter, and she couldn't put my care in another person's hands. And in a way, I feel that it was almost a protective urge. I can handle this. This is my daughter. I can handle this. We don't need to get lab tests. I can take care of it. And that is nails to a T. I can handle this. I can do it. And I really believe that's what it was. And in a way, I actually believe she felt as though she was doing me a favor. I'm going to spare her these invasive tests, all the things that are going to come from this, all the things that could come from this. We will handle it ourselves.
When Allison and her mom get home from the doctor's appointment, Nails takes her into the bathroom and she sets her up in the mirror with a razor and shaving cream. She proceeds to show her daughter how to shave like a man would.
She was very precise about it. And I can recall her voice as she said, "The sun will tan the sides of your face evenly. It will hide the stubble." I recall her saying that. I recall her showing me how to use the razor, telling me how to position my jaw, for example, so that I could get a really close cut. I mean, things that you would expect a man to do with his son, or a woman to do with her son, but I was not her son. And the difference there was overlooked. I can't fathom it, but she did do exactly that. And I can picture the bathroom, the green and pink motif that they had in there, the exposed light bulbs with that they called Hollywood lights. I can picture the phone that they had, because we had phones in every room. I can picture all of these things. I picture the can of Barbasol that she used. I remember how hot it was that day. I remember it all.
So then this becomes your routine. And every day before you go to school, this is your own private, your own secret practice that you do.
Every day, twice a day.
So before you go to school in the morning, and then when you come back after school.
Exactly.
But this routine isn't really working, in that it isn't protecting Allison from shame. The kids at school are cruel. Not all of them, but many are. At that age, to be different in any way is to be a target.
You know, they had a name for me. They had a couple of names for me, as kids do. One was the animal. One was the werewolf. I was the werewolf. And that was what I heard walking down the hall. And the animal was based on a kid's toy. There was a commercial and it said, "Nothing can stop the animal." And they would say that, "Nothing can stop the animal." And I was the animal. I was the werewolf. I was a thing. And I will say that that was a minority of the students. There were some very cruel kids, but there were also some wonderful kids. There were also some kids who respected me, cared about me, treated me with dignity and with love. I have to remember that when I think about this. Otherwise, there's just a whole lot of sadness, but it is really balanced out by remembering the good.
One friend in particular, Missy, becomes essential to Allison's sanity and sense of self. Missy is compassionate, she's caring and loyal. She's also protective of Allison, willing to embrace, defend, and accept her as she is. In Missy's eyes, Allison is not an animal or a monster or a thing. She's just her. And to Missy, that's just perfect. The same compassion, however, is not found within the walls of Allison's home. Nails is still refusing to pursue medical treatment for her daughter. And on top of this, she and Rooster are fighting more and more. Their marriage seems to be falling apart, and Nails is very forthcoming with her kids about her feelings about their dad. Perhaps too forthcoming.
She told us about their sex life. She told us about the fact that my father wanted her to watch Dr. Ruth with him, and she wouldn't do it. She told us about all the things that he held against her. She told us about all the things that she felt she was a victim because of how he treated her, all these ways. I was her confidant by the time I was 5 or 6. I think the fracas between the two of them really defined the household, and it really defined our intrinsic tension. And in a way, though it was never outright said, it was considered selfish to advocate for oneself. That you would just never think to do it. You would never think to ask for something because my parents were too busy fighting. And fighting is a full-time job when it comes to my family. And you know, you don't have any room for extracurriculars. And I fell under the umbrella of extracurriculars. I was not that person whose medical needs were addressed because it interfered with the busy work of them fighting. And they fought about everything. They fought about whether Jim Nabors was gay. They fought about whether Billy Joel was Jewish. And I mean, it is unbelievable the minutiae about which they would argue. But they also argued about more serious things, of course. And it ranged. And the sheer spectrum of topics that they could get into it about are just mind-boggling. And in the meantime, the kids are just on the sideline, and we weren't heard or seen. My father was a domestic violence perpetrator. He didn't do it often, but of course, as we know, once is too much. And I knew that. I knew when he hit my mother that was unacceptable, and I couldn't say or do anything about it. I was completely sidelined, but there was also violence that came from my mother. There was slapping, there was throwing. I remember at one point, my father was furious about something and he upended the dinner table and the floor was sticky with lemonade for days afterward. No one cleaned it up.
We'll be right back.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of 2 clinically studied ingredients in 1 revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
In 1990, Allison's parents separate and divorce. Her dad moves out, and Nails stays in the house. The house is very important to her, and she'll do anything to hold on to it. Nails also becomes involved with a younger man named Bill.
They became very, very strange. It was her taking care of his every need, her bending to his will, and her giving him everything she thought he needed. And once again, the kids were sidelined in this effort. My father knew about him and was furious. Couldn't do anything. There was nothing that could be done about it. The dynamic of the household now was my mother and Bill. And that's what defined the household. And the household was defined by the places where they would sit wrapped in conversation. You did not interrupt them. You did not talk to them. They were busy. Same as my parents were busy fighting, my mother and Bill were busy being my mother and Bill.
By the time Bill's in the picture, Allison is about 17, and she's eager to leave home. She's applying to colleges. She knows she does not want to stay in this chaotic environment, now made even more chaotic because of Bill's disposition and his footprint.
It was so painful to come in the house and see all the vestiges of this person who didn't care about us. There was no attempt to get to know the kids. He was basically there for the goodies, for the pool, for the master bedroom, which he claimed. He wasn't interested in us, and we were not interested in him. We just wanted him out, and he was not leaving, so I knew I needed to get out. Once my mother and Bill left the house, and I could see them walking around in the winery. I could see them walking together, talking, as they always did. And I looked at them. It couldn't have been for more than 10, 15 seconds, but sometimes life just freezes. And in that moment, I thought, I'm done. I'm fucking done. And I looked around. I was in the master bedroom. I had been snooping in the master bedroom. And I saw the pig.
Because grown people have piggy banks?
Apparently. And I saw the baseball bat and talk about going together like peanut butter and jelly. And it was like somebody else had picked that bat up and slammed and slammed and slammed until it was all over. And there was a heck of a lot of money in there. And I took it. I knew I was going to get caught. And I think that part of me wanted to be caught. Because part of me was like, you're going to see me. You will see me. And I will make myself seen. But I think that the overarching thing was I wanted to take something. So much had been taken from me. And I wanted to take something. My stability, my security, such as it was, with my parents being as they were, had been stolen from me, and there was nothing I could do but steal the coins and the dollars that lay before me. And money was a very, very important thing in my home and the place where I grew up, and that represented something to me. And so I knew darn well I was going to get caught, but in the moment, I just grabbed and grabbed and grabbed, and then I ran.
And what happens when Nails does catch you and confronts you?
I was told, pack a bag and go. I don't care where you have to sleep. I don't care if you sleep in the park. You are going to get out, and you are going to get out right now. So I called a friend, and she picked me up. My mother said to me, I will call the police and have you escorted from this house. You will get out. You stole money, and you will get out of the house right now. So I really had no choice in the matter.
So, Allison, what did you feel like in this liminal time between living under your parents' roof and then, you know, heading to college, which, as you point out, is a kind of way station between childhood and adulthood? You had people who were amazing to you and then people who were misguided in the way that they tried to help and then people who were just downright cruel. What was your feeling about yourself as you were sort of entering college?
I liked myself. I was a very likable narrator, and I wanted the best for myself. I was not interested in settling for the shit that was around me. And I felt that moving forward into a new world, a new experience, and something that I could define on my own terms was the way to go. Something that really defines my memory of that time is how hot, how bloody hot, Northern San Diego County can get. And I remember moving very slowly in that heat and feeling like I'm trapped. How am I ever going to get out? But knowing that I had to, it was like it was almost as if something had blown up behind me and there was a heat at my back and it was pushing me and it was pushing me out of that place. And I liked myself enough to know that I needed to save myself.
Allison finally does escape that place. She makes her way to college. It's 1992, and she's in a lecture hall, the kind with very small seats with little floating desks attached to them. Allison can't sit in these seats. She's overweight, and though she doesn't know it at the time, weight retention is part of her syndrome. Another student named Carol approaches Allison when she sees she can't fit in the chair. Carol says, "Do you ever feel like a freak?" But she's not saying this to be mean. She's saying this because she feels this way too. She and Allison immediately connect and become fast friends.
I think somehow she zeroed in on me. And sometimes you see somebody and you see that they share something that you have. And I think she saw that. And it was really liberating to hear that. Especially at a place like UC Santa Barbara, where I've often said that's 80% clones and 20% amazing people. There are a lot of beautiful, beautiful people in Santa Barbara, and neither Carol nor I fit in there, literally, figuratively, metaphorically, however you want to put it. And I think we really recognize that in each other. I think her thing was that emotionally, she was very, very mature. Almost a little too much so. And I think it felt like she really just wasn't understood by the people around her. And she certainly felt like that in high school. And in college, I think she came to college hoping that there would be something different. And she didn't find it. But in terms of physicality, she fit in. She was thin. And to my eyes, she was beautiful. She had luminous blue eyes and dark hair. And she was gorgeous. I don't know if she realized how well she fit in, but she was a lovely girl.
That's so interesting because there are so many different ways of feeling like a freak. And so many different kinds of behaviors and secrets and secret lives and secret shames that most of us in one way or another have, and that it doesn't necessarily show itself on the surface.
Exactly. It's how are you weird in the world? And Carol saw that. She saw that I was weird in the world in a different way than she was. And I think there was a draw there. And I've been drawn to people like that as well. People who I could tell, hey, you've got something. And what I came to realize is everyone does. I think at that point in my life, I came to realize that I wasn't the only one who felt weird in the world and felt like a freak. And she really helped me to understand that.
Carol also illuminates something else for Allison, another way in which her parents failed her. Carol mentions that she has an appointment to see her gynecologist, and Allison doesn't even know what that is because she's never been to a gynecologist. She hasn't seen a doctor of any kind since she was 15. Not a pediatrician, not a family doctor, not an internist. Her parents are educated people, people of means. They were people who knew how to make the typical doctor's appointments for their family. But they didn't.
The last doctor I had seen was a dentist. And I remember feeling very, very self-conscious. Fortunately, they did not comment on any of my facial hair. But I remember feeling grateful that I didn't need to go to the doctor and I didn't need to be exposed for what I was. But I also thought, this isn't right. there's something that's not right about this. And when she said that about going to the gynecologist, I had never been examined in that way. And it scared the hell out of me. At that point in my life, my periods had already started disappearing, which is part of the syndrome that I have. So I was like, well, I'm sure I need to, but there's no way in hell that I'm going to go and expose myself that way. And I remember being very jealous that she had the internal strength to do something as mundane as go to a doctor's appointment.
Do you think that the reason why your parents didn't have you do the sort of annual well visit to a pediatrician or things that were usual was simply neglect? Or do you think that it was that if a pediatrician really were to take a look at you, they would have to say, you know, to your parents, look, there's really something going on here that needs to be addressed?
I think that they did not want that call to action. I think it was that malicious. And I mean, my parents couldn't clean lemonade up off the floor. They couldn't water the lawn. They sure as hell weren't going to pursue treatment for their daughter. I mean, that was just not going to happen. I think they weren't interested in having to pursue that. And I think they knew that if they were to take me to the doctor, this was something that was very obviously going to come up. And they didn't want to deal with it. And I think maybe they wrapped it in the idea of, oh, we'll do it later. We'll take care of this later. And I think you can later yourself to death. And I think that's what they did.
But Allison isn't going to later herself to death. She is still in college when she realizes that later has become now. She searches for a specialist who she just picks at random from the yellow pages. But it turns out to be a good pick. Just like the doctor she saw many years earlier, the one whose advice Nails refused to take, this doctor tells her that she has something called hirsutism, an extreme case. He suggests labs, and though historically Allison has felt shame about going to the doctor, she's emboldened, and she agrees to follow up with lab work. When the tests come back, he gives her even more information, a diagnosis beyond hirsutism. She has something called congenital adrenal hyperplasia. To have this diagnosis is huge. To have this diagnosis is to unlock the secret of herself that had been concealed and unknown for so long. The doctor puts her on a treatment plan. Then he asks if she'd be willing to be photographed from the neck down for a textbook. As she is, he says, a textbook case.
That was the first time that I had heard the name of what was wrong with me, and there was something so liberating about that. There was a diagnosis, there was a name. It wasn't just a thing, it was a name. But the wind went right out of my sails when I was asked to be in a textbook. I remember sitting there in this office, looking at him and just blinking. And I think I said something to the degree of, I'll think about it, vowing never, ever to do it. There was no way, neck down or not, no means of identification or not. There was no way in hell that I was going to appear in a textbook. It was making me into a thing, into a case. And I couldn't bear that.
Yeah, into the animal.
Exactly.
How long do you stay on a treatment plan before you go, you know what, this just isn't working and it's expensive and it's time consuming and, you know, I don't have the insurance for it and I'm just not going to do it anymore?
I'm going to say something on the order of 6 months. Every month I would go buy my bottles of hope and I would take my pills and it wasn't doing anything. My levels were going down and they kept telling me, like, your levels are taking a fall. This is wonderful. This is great. But I was still shaving twice a day. I still had hair all over my body. What the hell good were my levels if I was still wearing out the bit? I mean, I couldn't see continuing with this.
We'll be back in a moment with more Family Secrets.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique two-in-one product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just two capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com. Where America goes to hire.
Allison graduates from college. She leaves California and begins her life as a working young adult, trying to navigate her syndrome, her relationships, and her identity. She still struggles with her medication. She's not really in touch with her parents or her brothers, and she begins having relationships with men, which triggers many long-held insecurities and fears. As she strives to feel comfortable in her skin, she fears how partners will view her body.
I got a job as an editor at the North Platte Telegraph in North Platte, Nebraska, which is exactly the inverse of Santa Barbara, California. I mean, it's everything that you would picture in the rural Midwest. And I was there, and I was still taking the medication when I went there and I had to get it refilled, and I called a pharmacist and he said, "Well, this must be for your husband." And I said, "No, it's for me." And he was very confused. And it hurt so much that even somebody in the medical profession was stymied by me, that it took away all of my desire to continue with this. And I just said, "You know, forget it," and hung up. And I did not take that medication again. I was like, I am done. I was losing steam on it anyway. And having the pharmacist say that was kind of the nail in the coffin for the medication at that point. I was so scared. I was unable to really have intercourse. I was terrified. Everything in me just tightened up. And I had an experience with a man who was incredibly cruel about my body. But he was not just incredibly cruel, but he would be both incredibly cruel and then incredibly kind. He would say something lovely about my voice, my hands, my face, and then he would just say, like, "And you have the hairiest little ass," with a big smile on his face. And this is somebody who actually claimed he wanted a relationship. And I ran the hell away from that. I ran from it as fast as I could, because I didn't like being alone. I wanted a relationship. I didn't know that I could extend the emotional commitment that it would take to be in a relationship, but I sure wanted to try. That said, I had seen enough in my own house. I had seen enough abuse to recognize what that was. And at that point, I was still quite young, but I understood abuse when I heard it and saw it. And I ran from him and didn't look back.
Well, that's such a saving grace, Allison, because sometimes the opposite happens, right? Sometimes abuse is the only thing that somebody knows. It's sort of the ground of their childhood, so it feels familiar and they return to it. And so you really had a lot of strength to just know this is not going to be my life.
It was an instinct. It was like someone tapping me on the knee and my foot just slamming up. I couldn't make myself be with him. There was something in me that said, do not do this. This is not somebody you want to open yourself up to. And never regret, never look back.
Some years pass and Allison moves back to California. She's in Berkeley now, and she's planning a trip to Europe. Her good friend Matt, someone for whom she harbors romantic feelings, lives there, and she's excited to travel and to see him. But she's feeling self-conscious about her appearance. She decides to give laser hair removal a try. This is a big step for her, but she thinks it'll be a good idea. She thinks it will make her feel better.
Oh, it was huge. It was basically me addressing the elephant in the room. This is what I have. I have facial hair. This is what I have, and I'm going to do something about it. Because I wanted to go to Europe and not worry about that. I wanted to go to Europe looking good. I wanted to go to Europe looking like a woman. And I went to a clinic in Berkeley. It was actually right across from the Claremont Hotel, which is a beautiful historic place. And it was just a lovely part of town. And I chose it for that reason. It was like, well, it's in Claremont. It must be good. And it was a hell of a hack job. It took an hour. It hurt like nothing else I had ever experienced before. And what happened was I broke out in incredible folliculitis. It looked like acne. And I remember thinking, my God, I look like the Elephant Man. It was horrific. And I still had to shave. It was like, it really was like shaving in a minefield. I mean, it hurt so badly. And it happened 2 days after I had the procedure. And that was exactly when I was leaving to go to Europe. So I spent my first days in Europe, in Venice, terrified, alone, and in pain. And it was one of the worst moments of my life.
And what happened with Matt? Because it sounds like there was another sort of warning.
Oh, I showed up in Barcelona where we were going to meet for New Year's, and he had a girlfriend. They were very early in their relationship. They were very comfortable with each other, and they were very cute. And I knew just by hearing him talk about it, just by hearing him explain it to me, and I couldn't bear seeing him with her. And I didn't see him. I had come all that way and I didn't see him. And I didn't want him to see me. I just couldn't bear it.
So following this, you return to Berkeley. And how are you feeling? I mean, the folliculitis is just such a horrible thing because you were trying to do something that was going to make things better. And it actually not only didn't make things better, but briefly made things a whole hell of a lot worse. And against that backdrop, you also feel the loss of this friendship and the loss of this hope of somebody that you have feelings for. So when you return home, how are you doing at that point?
You know, it was both really terrible and almost like a new beginning. Like, all right, you know what? I got my butt kicked romantically. I dealt with the folliculitis, which when I was in Europe, I had taken care of it with hydrocortisone. And I was like, well, back to square one, but I learned some lessons here. And I had always been a very strangely positive person, strangely optimistic. And I was optimistic. I was like, well, this sucks. And I do remember being on my couch for 3 weeks and getting strep throat because I was lovesick. So it wasn't, you know, everything is roses. But I also thought, well, I've got to move on. This is so painful and so hurtful. And yet this person who I cared about is half a world away. And I really didn't have much contact with him after that. I felt as though I either needed to move forward or vegetate. And I was never interested in vegetating. I wanted to just go on with my life.
And that's just what Allison does. She goes on. In 2000, she meets a man named Adam.
Adam came into my life when I worked at Bayer Corporation here in Berkeley. And he was somebody who I first became aware of on my very first day of work because I heard him talking to everybody. And I thought, oh God, he's going to come up to me and small talk me to death. And that is exactly what happened. The man drove me insane. He was talking about the most boring stuff that drove me batty. You know, your first day at work, you want to be nice to somebody. But I just sort of smiled at him and said, you know, I'm not a morning person. So we came back right at noon and said, well, it's noon. Let's go to lunch. And I got to know him in this way where we worked together. We saw quite a bit of each other. And I grew to respect and admire him for who he was. Somebody who was kind and caring and open and all of those things that I questioned in myself. Am I kind? Am I caring? Am I open? I never felt that I was open. So I recognized that in him and it drew me to him.
It also seems like his self-presentation, his voice, the impression that he made on you when you first met him, you sort of felt some kind of kindredness with him.
Absolutely. The minute that I heard his voice, I thought, my God, this is somebody who is the closest presentation of oneself to me as I've ever seen. This is unbelievable. I mean, and he was so open about it. Now, I get called ma'am on the phone. He said that straight up. And I thought, my God. I get called sir in the grocery store, and I would never tell you that. But he said it with a smile, because as he told me early on, he said, I decided that I didn't give a damn what anybody thought about me when I was 16 years old. It wasn't like a negative thing. It wasn't an oppositional thing. It was a positive thing. Like, I don't care. I'm going to move forward in my life, and I'm going to speak my mind. And if I do it in a voice that's higher than most guys, well, so what? Who cared? And that was incredibly refreshing and incredibly exciting to me.
In addition to being a breath of fresh air for Allison, Adam also challenges her. But again, this is a positive thing. He encourages her to reflect on some of her behaviors, helping her to realize her patterns. He notices and tells her that it seems hard for her to be sincere. As Adam models sincerity for Allison, she exercises her lifelong defense mechanisms. I mean, how could she have gone through her life without defense mechanisms? Her favorite is deflection, making jokes around serious subjects, making light of things that actually trouble her.
Oh, he saw it and he just nailed me on it. And he was 100% correct. I've always used humor as a deflection mechanism. I've always used sort of this cockeyed, edgy way to distract them. Please don't see what I don't want you to see. Please don't recognize what I don't want you to recognize. And it was very hard for me to be sincere because sincerity was vulnerability. And Adam had embraced vulnerability, and I hadn't quite realized that until he really said that to me. And I thought, my God, you are willing to be vulnerable in this world. How? I couldn't figure that out.
Yeah, I love that. And it sounds like in the beginning of your relationship with him, that gave you the sense of hope or possibility or desire to once again seek medical treatment. And when you make an appointment, Adam says, do you want me to go with you? Radical, right?
That was amazing. It blew my mind. You're going to do what? You're going to come with me? And there was part of me that was like, oh, hell no. I do not want you to come with me. And then there was the bigger part of me that was like, please, I need you. and he was there. And I sat there and I filled out the medical questionnaire and we goofed off and we laughed together. And it was so very different than anything I'd ever experienced in a medical office, you know, being knuckleheads together the way that we always had been. And it really diffused my fears and my worries. I was still very anxious, of course, but I was able to do it, and I was able to do it because he was by my side.
Adam stays by her side. Soon they're engaged. With support from her partner and her doctor, she's now on a new and helpful treatment plan. She decides, despite her first experience with the folliculitis, to try laser hair removal before the wedding. Things are different now, and optimist that she's both hopeful and confident that this will be a better experience.
What I hadn't understood before is that it took both parts. It took being medically controlled and the cosmetic procedure to really get the hair under control. It's like, okay, my levels are back down. I don't have the testosterone raging through my system the way that I so often do. Let's try this again. Let's give it another try. And with Adam by my side, we went out to Walnut Creek in beautiful suburban Bay Area, and I did it. It took, I want to say, something like between 10 and 15 sessions to get it under control. It was quite painful and a little stressful, but they made it so manageable. And they gave us wine, and that helped a lot.
How did you feel on your wedding day?
Oh my gosh, that was the coolest day. It was so awesome. We were married at a restaurant called Café de la Paz. There's a ceremony in the Jewish tradition called Yichud, and you go into a space just to be alone with your partner. And there was an herb shop next door to Café de la Paz, and they very kindly allowed us to do Yichud in there. And we went in together, and later the guests said that they could hear me yelling, "I'm married. Oh my God, I'm married. No fucking way, I'm married." I mean, I was just like, I remember doing the can-can in my dress. Like, I was just over the top because I just had married the coolest person in the world. Why wouldn't I be happy? I was thrilled. And I kept thinking I was going to cry. And I never cried that day because I was just too damn happy to cry. I mean, it was a beautiful day.
You talk about, you know, toward the end of the book, you talk about the way that people, very possibly well-meaning, but nonetheless, people trying to fix things over the years, trying to make things sort of be okay in this way that was really, really not helpful, because what it was doing was basically telling you that you should be different or that you are fixable. It sounds to me like Adam was so completely accepting and in love with you. This getting the medical treatment, having the laser hair removal, it was something that you wanted to do because this mattered to you. You wanted to move through the world in a different way, and you wanted to get rid of the hair, and that mattered to you, not because it was some societal norm or thing or standard of beauty, but really because this was messing with how you wanted to feel about yourself.
Exactly. I was not interested in the billboards that trumpeted, you know, hairless is perfect. I wasn't interested in the social mores. I was interested in feeling okay when I walked in a room. And I trusted my gut on that. And I am well aware that it could seem, when somebody does something like this, when somebody has a pretty radical cosmetic procedure, oh, you know, they're bending to societal will. No, that wasn't the case for me. I knew that I wanted to get rid of this, meaning the facial hair, so that I could move through the world in a way that felt unimpeded by something so dramatic. And that came entirely internally, absolutely.
Here's Allison reading one more passage from her powerful memoir, Bearded Lady.
If you told me in the beginning that it would take years to figure out even how to fight I might have shrugged and given up from the start. As it was, finding the right combination meant spinning the lock over and over. You could have told me that and I might have believed you, or maybe not. Could be that this was something I had to discover on my own, through fits and starts, giving up hope and picking it back up once more, running into walls before finding what looked like the right path. Even now, I'm still holding my breath.
Family Secrets is a production of iHeartRadio. Molly Zakur is the story editor, and Dylan Fagan is the executive producer. If you have a family secret you'd like to share, please leave us a voicemail and your story could appear on an upcoming episode. Our number is 1-888-SECRET-0. That's the number zero. You can also find me on Instagram at Danny Writer. And if you'd like to know more about the story that inspired this podcast, check out my memoir, Inheritance.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.